Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Keegan, I'm so glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. I'm very tired. I got off a plane a few hours ago.
I couldn't do it. Oh. I'm a wreck when I'm traveling.
I mean, it was okay. It's only like about like a 3 hour, 3.5 hour.
But it's the whole process of everything that just wears me out. I'm not a person who can just hop off a plane and like go do the day.
I mean, usually I am. I just think I had like a really long week.
Yeah.
You know, because it
you
was
had
like,
to jam a lot into a week.
Yeah, it was a lot of family events. And then this plane ride was like, I was in a middle seat, which is never fun.
No.
And I was between like a dude next to me in camo who was, like, manspreading.
Love
and
it.
Then an old lady sat down next to me and, like, put her arms on both armrests, which I was just like, ugh.
So you're literally just, like, squeezing together.
Yes,
yes. Oh, that's horrible.
So I ordered a Bloody Mary.
Of course, you have to.
A double Bloody Mary and just...
It does not matter what time of the day that I am flying, I'm ordering alcohol. Because you're in the air!
And a Bloody Mary, I don't know, like... There's something about, like, that drink in particular that, for me, on planes is good, you know?
I like a white wine on planes.
Okay, okay.
But, no, even as an adult, no matter what, I have to get apple juice on airplanes.
That's funny.
Apple juice on airplanes is amazing.
I haven't
know
had
what it is.
Apple juice in so long.
I don't drink apple juice unless I'm on planes, really.
That's so funny.
But since I was, like, a baby, like, I need to have, like, I'll have my white wine and my apple juice. It's quite a combination.
Oh, my gosh.
It's great. So, Keegan got something horrible for us to
start. I mean, and this is a couple of weeks old, but, you know, our recording schedule has been pretty wonky for this month, so I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I had saved it in my things of things to talk about.
Yes.
So, earlier, not this month, because we are in August, but last month in July, Sadie Roberts Joseph, who's the founder of the African American Museum, was found dead in the trunk of her car.
Oh my gosh.
And thus far, we still don't know who did it. You know?
There's no evidence of any kind that was, like, left behind.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that the police have released that information as of
it's
yet.
It's probably still, like, in the process.
Right, yeah. So she was a 75-year-old woman from Louisiana, and she had founded an African-American history museum there in Louisiana, and police and investigators are still working to find out who was responsible for that. I don't even know what the cause of death was. Like, I don't even know if they've released that information.
Yeah, I'm sure everything is very confidential right now until they have all of their tests done and complete, and then hopefully, you know, this can stay in the media long enough for more information to kind of come out.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that they're going to do everything that they can because she was such a well-known figure in that area. She also organized, in addition to, like, having founded this African-American museum, she also organized an annual Juneteenth festival at the museum every year.
That's amazing.
Which is really, really cool. And, yeah, she was just, like, a really great lady, really, like, helped her community and focused a whole lot on, like, education and the education of African-Americans and making sure that people really, like, knew and understood that. So it was such a blow to that community.
Yeah.
Whenever she was murdered. And, you know, I...
And found in the trunk of her car.
In the trunk of her own car.
And she's 75. 75. It's disgusting.
So 2 days ago, a bunch of students in her parish in Louisiana, they engraved a bunch, like 200 backpacks with her name, and like each backpack also contained like her biography, and they distributed them to like children who needed backpacks for school.
Aww.
So in her honor, which is really, really lovely.
That is a beautiful gesture.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, because she's focused so much of her life on, like, education and helping her community.
Yeah.
That's really lovely.
To think of something like that, I think, is really cool. That's really beautiful.
Yeah, so if we ever hear more about what happened, you know, that's something that we can definitely share.
Yeah, that is horrifying.
Sad.
It's very sad, but it to me, the ending of that with the students she left behind.
Right, her legacy.
Continuing her legacy, I think, is something really beautiful. I mean, it's awful when good things have to come out of horrible situations, but the fact that her death didn't stop her movement, I think, is always something that, like, when I think about when my time comes, like, what am I going to leave behind? What's the, like, even if it's the smallest legacy, I want to leave something behind.
Right.
So the fact that these people are actually taking the things that she did in life and perpetuating that into the future, I think, is a beautiful
thing. Yeah, and I know that they held a lot of services for her at, like, several different, like, African-American churches throughout Louisiana. A lot of vigils were held in her honor. So she was definitely a very well-loved person.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
It is.
Huh. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the debate.
Okay. We had round two of the debates. And ding, I ding, will ding. Say, because I had been out of town for the whole week, I did not watch the debates in their entirety, the first and second nights. But I did watch portions of them, and I have read several articles about what took place during the debate. So we can chat a little bit about that.
Let's chat a little bit. I want to talk about Joe Biden.
Oh, dear.
Because this guy is coming under fire a lot.
But you know what's weird is that most articles I read said that, you know, like, oh, he was a little unsteady on his feet, but ultimately it's a win for him. And I was like,
yeah, I've seen that too.
In what I've seen of the debates, like,
doesn't
granted,
look great.
It doesn't look great. Like, I have not seen them in their entirety, but, or that night in its entirety, but he looked not good to me. And maybe they're just talking about, like, comparatively to the first round of debates?
Maybe. I don't know. But to me, it seems very, like, I mean, everyone else is coming down hard on him. It seems like he is not retorting very well. It seems
like... Oh, no,
no.
He is not good.
He's not... I don't know.
He's not good at being on the defensive. Like,
he's not.
Whenever he's just answering questions that are asked to him, he seems okay. But he's really not... He's very unsteady on his feet anytime.
And he seems very defensive as well.
He is, which is probably a result from the first night whenever Kamala Harris, like, took him to task.
Yeah.
And I think he realized in that moment, like, oh, shit, like, people are going to...
come at
criticize me.
Well, and yeah, because he was kind of, you know, we talked about how beloved he was when he was vice president.
Right.
I think he kind of thought that, like...
he could skate on that.
He could skate on it and that, you know, he was Obama's VP. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot coming with him. A quote that he said during the debate, he said, "Everyone is talking about how terrible I am on these issues. Barack Obama knew exactly who I was."
Okay.
It's such a name drop statement where it's like, well, Obama knew, and Obama was fine with me.
We know exactly what you're doing, and I think Cory Booker even called him on that.
He did. I have something written here somewhere. He says that bringing up Obama is like his centralizing factor in his campaign. That's like all he really does, and he has a great quote where he says, "You invoke President Obama more than anyone in this campaign. You can't do it when it's convenient and dodge it when it's not." And I think that brings up a really good point, because there were questions that were asked of him about advice he gave Obama during certain instances, like about, like, deportation and things like that, where he was like, "I can't disclose the advice that I gave to President Obama."
Right, and he would distance himself from those policies as if he wasn't, like, central to those.
Yeah.
But when it's convenient for his image.
Yes, he would talk about them and bring them up and talk about him and Obama and the whole thing. So he had a really weird, you know... situation going on, and they really, I mean, the other candidates brought up a lot of stuff that he did that was not great.
Yes, Cory Booker really talked a lot. I mean, it was a win for Booker last night. I've always been kind of like meh about Cory Booker, but I mean, not last night, I guess, but whenever he debated,
it was Monday, right?
It was
Tuesday. It was Tuesday because it was the same night as the finale of The Bachelorette.
Tuesday and Wednesday, because there was two nights.
Yeah.
So, Cory Booker, he's never really impressed me, but whenever he debated, he actually did impress me this last time.
Yeah.
Because he seemed way more solid on his feet, and he did criticize Biden about his criminal reform.
Criminal justice, yeah. And also he critiqued Bill de Blasio for not firing the police officer who killed Eric Garner.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I think that those are, like, two really great things to bring
up. He really
up that
leaned
put you
into
ahead.
His strong, like, you know, like, that's Cory Booker's, like, strong suit.
Yeah.
You know, his criminal justice reform. It's what he spent a lot of his career doing and talking about. So it
so
was
he's gonna shine.
Smart for him to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing about Biden is, I think a big part of it is I really felt in watching him that he was 76 years old.
Yeah.
You know, like, because that's what it looked like. It looked a 76-year-old man who cannot, he fumbled over his words a lot. He paused a lot. He was the only, he's honestly the only candidate I've ever seen in a debate who, when the moderators are like, your time's up, just stops talking.
Yeah.
Because usually they'll try and finish their thought.
Yeah, exactly.
And he just won't. Like, he just stops.
He's like, okay. Yeah, and it was interesting to me, too, how he, it seemed like he was almost trying to stay relevant and, like, modern in his politics when he was talking about, like, Gillibrand asked him about an op-ed he did where he had written opposing the child care tax credit. And then, so he brings up his role in the Violence Against Women Act. You know what I mean? But, like, look, I'm for equal pay, and I'm like this. Yeah, I do this
thing. He pivots a lot.
He pivots, and I feel like that's such a hot-button issue with a lot of people when you talk about, like, the Violence Against Women Act, where he's like, let me throw that in there, because that's going to sound really, like, good to me.
Right, yes. Yeah. And because everyone knows what that is, or, like, can infer what that is based on what it, you know.
Yeah.
So it makes him look good in that way. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's
I would have liked to have seen him in a debate with Sanders and Warren. I would have liked to have seen them debate each other.
Yeah.
Because I'm really starting to believe that those are the ones that we're going to be seeing more
of. I think so. But they have to, like, narrow it. You know what I mean? They have to show us everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kamala Harris, I mean, after the last debate, was doing really, really good. So she came in, I think, with, like, a lot of positivity.
Yes,
and a lot of good
feelings. She had lost a few, like, after the last debate, she'd gone way up in numbers, in points. She had lost a couple of points before this debate, but still, all in all,
I mean,
pretty good.
But they did bring up the Attorney General's stuff.
Right. And she had gone in, it felt to me like she went into this debate feeling pretty confident.
Yeah.
And then got kind of rocked because her, you know, we kind of touched on it, we've touched on it in past episodes, that her history with criminal reform is not good. I mean, she actively tried to keep people who were innocent in prison, you know?
Yeah, and, like, and I mean, Gabbard pointed out that Harris had put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Harris was asked if she'd ever smoked marijuana, she laughed. I don't think that was at the debate. I think that was, like, another time. But, like, when asked if she'd ever smoked, she, like, laughed. And, like, that's just, like, that's not cute.
Right. It's not cute because there are people in prison because of this. You know what I mean? And there have been really good articles written about, I'm sure, that fine line that she felt she needed to walk.
Yeah.
Being a woman of color in a traditionally very male-dominated field where you needed people to respect you, but at the expense of communities of color, really, is, like, what happened there. And she was not good at, whenever she was doing that job, like, she was not good at making sure that police officers were punished whenever they used overt force against people. So, I mean, all of that is stuff that she's really going to need to come up with a... With legitimate answers for, and honestly, probably she's just going to have to apologize and try and fix it.
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, that was something that Pete Buttigieg did really well, where he apologized for, you know, not having action sooner when the police in his, you know, area were.
You have to take responsibility for that.
Exactly. There was some interesting healthcare stuff, especially I have written between Biden and Harris, where Biden wants to do this, like, Obamacare 2.0 kind of plan. And then Kamala Harris is talking about this Medicare for All plan, where in the course of in 10 years, Americans will be enrolled in a program paid for by the federal government. And then Biden brings up the deductible and says, anytime someone tells you you're going to get something good in 10 years, you should wonder why it's going to take 10 years. Which I think even if Kamala Harris's plan, like, in the long run is going to be a really good thing, like, that plants a lot of doubt when
well,
he says something
I mean,
like that.
Well, I mean, it's a hard thing because, yes, it does. However, to completely restructure our entire healthcare system is going to take a long time. Like, you know, it is. So it's kind of hard to judge that on the surface.
And I think a lot of people, though, who maybe don't have a lot of knowledge about that kind of stuff, though, will hear what he said if they were watching the debate and be kind of like, ooh, he
for
brings
sure.
up a point.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Well, and a lot of people are in such a situation right now with their healthcare that they need changes to happen more quickly than that.
Yeah, exactly. The biggest thing that I took away from a lot of the articles that I was reading is, like, why are they so focused on putting each other down at this point rather than talking about how they're going to take down Donald Trump? Although Kirsten Gillibrand did say that her first act of president would be to Clorox the Oval Office.
I know. Which I love. I think that's hilarious. I that know. Is like level 100 shade.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the point to start, yes, there should be some attacks between the Democratic candidates, because that's, you have to do it. Like, that's part of narrowing it down.
It's debating, you know?
It's like, debating, but I also, like, I want to hear when they're talking about their plans for change. I want to hear, yes, what are you going to do once you're president? But right now, I really want to hear, what are you going to do to take this man down?
Well, but I don't know how you would articulate that. You know what I mean? Because for me, hearing what you're going to do as president, for me, like, as a Democratic voter, is kind of how you're going to take that guy down. You know what I mean? Because I don't know how you would practically do that right now. Like, the only way to take him down is to get elected.
I mean, right. But I feel like for me, and I don't know if this is, like, the correct thing to do in these situations, I just wish that it was almost, like, I feel like, by bringing up Donald Trump and talking about wanting to make change, like, I feel like mentioning his name and making comparisons and saying how I'm going to fix what he's destroyed, XYZ, and go down the list. And what they're talking about, it is. They are talking about how they're going to fix a lot of those things. But I feel like to kind of get the national uproar of, like, yeah, we really need to do something about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sense? No, you are making sense. I think I'm just of two minds about it, because part of me feels like I don't want to bring him up all the time, because I feel like we talked about him too much in 2016,
right,
and it was part of the problem.
They retaliated.
And we don't want to give his base any reason to feel like, well, President Trump is being attacked, so we need to, like, push back, you know, and become more active.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
I think it's a really good point.
But I did love that Elizabeth Warren did say at one point, I don't remember who was talking, somebody who's not going to be in the race for much longer, I'm sure, but he was saying that, I mean, he was basically, like, elaborating on all the stuff that doesn't make sense or isn't practical to do or whatever, and Warren had this great quote where she was like, I don't understand why you would go through the time and energy that it takes to run for president just to come over here and talk to us about what you can't do, you know, and I was just like, sick burn, you know, but I do feel like that. I feel like, you know, focus on your policies, focus on, like, what you can do, focus on how we are going to undo all of this shit that, like, has been done over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And I think someone else also said, I can't remember who said it, but somebody else also said, like, the person who's really enjoying themselves right now is Donald Trump watching us all fight each other, you know?
Exactly. And that's, I feel like, what a lot of it came to, because, like, there, you do have to debate each other. That's the whole point. But, like, I feel like as long as the priority stays in working together to get a good Democratic candidate, that's what everybody should have in mind. Yes, you want to be the president. You want to be that Democratic candidate. That's your goal. I get it. But I think it was Bernie Sanders who said this, where, like, we need to support our fellow Democratic candidates because we want to make sure that the best person for the job, even if it's not you, is going to get
and,
the job
and Warren
done.
Said something similar after the debates. I think it was Anderson Cooper tried to get her to, like, say something about Biden.
Yeah.
And Warren was like, I'm not the person for that job. I'm not the person who, like, I'm not going to tear other Democrats down.
Yeah,
I won't
girl.
Do it. So I think that's the right mentality to have.
I agree.
You know,
and
it's
that,
like,
makes you look real good when you do that.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. I love her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
really starting to really like her too. One more quick thing that I found really fascinating about the debates coming up on September 12th and 13th. There may be much fewer candidates.
Yes, they're making cuts.
They're making cuts because candidates will need 130,000 unique donors and register at least 2% support in 4 polls. So 7 have already met the qualifications, and that is Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. And there are a few that are, like, right on the cusp of that. Mm-hmm. But when I look at this list, to me, that's, like, the main party right now.
Yes. You know I mean, I think Beto's not going to go much longer.
I know. I love him, but I don't think he will.
I love him. I don't love him as president. You know, if somebody wanted to pick him for their vice, I think that that could work.
I think that would be amazing, actually. If it was, like, Warren and...
And Beto? Yeah, I could see that, actually. I think that that would be good. I think he could be a good vice. I do not see him being a president, at least not right now.
Yeah.
But the others, Biden, Booker, Buttigieg, Harris, Sanders, and Warren, yes, with, like, maybe Julian Castro might be a dark horse.
Yeah.
There were a couple of other people who kind of were creeping up.
Yeah.
Where I was like... because Julian Castro has consistently performed well, he's just not polling super well. So. Right.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Well, we have one more thing. I'm going to end this episode on a happy note. We made a post on Wednesday, I believe it was, about Ethiopia planting more than 350 million trees in 12 hours.
What?
So I wanted to elaborate on that a little bit.
Please do.
So this is part of a reforestation campaign called Green Legacy, spearheaded by their Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed. Millions of people planted trees to reach their goal of 300 million. That was their goal, was 300 million. And within the first 12 hours, they had already planted 150 million trees.
Wow.
It's insane. So the record before this was actually in 2017 in India, where they set the world record of 1.5 million volunteers who planted 66 million trees in 12 hours. 66 million to 353, I believe, mm-hmm. was the final count, mm-hmm. is
insane.
Insane. So this campaign that they're calling the Green Legacy will help farmers out of poverty. Right now, 80% of Ethiopia's population depends on agriculture as their livelihood, and it will help the effects of climate change. Studies show that restoring the world's lost forests could remove two-thirds of all the planet-warming carbon and could capture about 150 billion tons of carbon in total. And global carbon emissions are around 150 billion tons per year. So if all of this could, this restoration of the forest, if this could continue, it could combat the carbon that we're putting mm-hmm, out into mm-hmm. the world. It's just, it's such a cool thing. There's been some weird comments in our post about... I don't really read
There's
them.
Always weird comments.
I don't really read them anymore, honestly.
I feel like people just like to be contrarian, honestly.
Yeah, and they want to talk about, like, well, who gave them the money for that? And who did that? And it's like... That
who did... It doesn't matter.
It
who
does not
did
matter.
The work?
They, like, did the work. They had millions of volunteers plant 350 million trees.
And
in
I just, I hate when people feel the need to pivot the conversation. Like, that can be a separate conversation,
yeah.
sure, but why is that where you go right away?
It's a thing, it, you know, it could be where they're from, it could be a place they're connected to, and they want to get the credit because they feel like they're not receiving the credit that they deserve. But honestly,
well,
yes,
listen, you, Trevor, or whoever the fuck you are on our Instagram.
Trevor is the name of
I looked at him.
My kid's goldfish.
He looks like a Trevor, you know, but not all Trevors. Sorry, not to shade.
The goldfish?
The goldfish. But sorry that, like, you personally are not getting the credit you think you
yeah.
deserve. Like, you didn't do shit anyway. Get out of my mentions.
Plant a tree. If you're so pissed, go out and plant a fucking tree.
Honestly.
The end.
You can put your own little private plaque planted by Trevor.
Yep.
Jesus.
That's what I want when I die. I want my ashes to be put into, like, the soil
yes,
of a tree.
Yes, that's what I wanted to. You know, yeah, they make those little pods.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you put them in the ground and the tree grows. But I would like, you know, some sort of plaque so people,
so
like,
people
don't
know.
Chop down
yeah.
the fucking tree.
And I would really only want to do that if, like, my family had a property that was going to, like, stay in the family. Like, you know?
I mean, I think what I would want to do is I would want to plant it at my cabin, and my family doesn't have any place up there anymore, but, like, a lot of the families, it's been passed down,
uh-huh.
and I think that as long as there's a plaque there, like,
yeah.
that's where I would want
yeah.
it to be.
I hear you. That is absolutely what I've been wanting to do,
and
too.
And then I'm making necklaces for everybody with my ashes.
I don't know. That crosses the line.
That crosses the line.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm weird about, like, that shit. Like, there's so much of that stuff where it's like, oh, this is a ring made of teeth, or, like, I saw somebody...
Oh, I think that shit is so cool.
Oh, God, it's so weird.
I love tooth rings.
I saw someone
I wish I still had my wisdom teeth so I could do it.
Apparently, it's a new thing, making, like, jewelry out of your breast milk. And I'm like, I don't...
That's really cool.
I don't like that.
I like the ashes thing. I like the tooth thing. I like the breast milk thing. I'm here for it.
Oh, God. I'm not.
I have my dog Buddy's ashes in my apartment, and I don't know how this was brought up, but I mentioned it to Max, and he didn't know, and he's like, is that why Penny barks all the time? Is that, like, do you think Buddy's haunting the place? And I'm like,
we have Achilles ashes. We have our dog's ashes. Achilles. Yeah.
What a sweet old lady.
Okay. All right. Well,
we are done with our mini episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have any sister solidarity stories, if you have any comments about today's episode, if you have any episode suggestions, anything that you want to send our way, go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. If you don't already follow us on Instagram, that would be really, really weird. I feel like everybody who listens probably follows on Instagram if they have one.
Yeah. If not, you're missing out. I mean, you're missing out on all the Trevor comments.
All the Trevor comments. There's so many Trevors in the world that you can go in. No, don't. Don't get involved in the comments. It's not worth your time.
It really isn't. It's an energy waster.
It really is. It's just going to make you mad. But go ahead and follow us anyways at Angry Neighborhood Feminist on Instagram. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go ahead and leave us a review on that business page. We love it so much, and give us 5 whole stars. And we really, really love it when you leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. If you're not already listening to us on Radio Public, go ahead and listen to us there. It is free for you, and it helps us out a little bit. And can I plug myself real quick?
Yes.
I am actually on today's episode of Keep It Weird.
Hey.
I was on last week's episode as well, where Ashley's wonderful boyfriend Joe was talking about all the science behind time travel.
And I think it was just his birthday, so happy birthday, Joe.
Yeah, happy birthday, Joe. I think it might be today, actually. And then Ashley talks about the paradoxes of time travel, and then I tell some real time travel stories, ? And it was super fun. Those girls are amazing. Joe is amazing. I had so much fun doing it. We really want to have Ashley on our show soon. We talked about different episodes we could do with her. Go give them support as well. Check it out. If you want to hear more of my voice today,
go do it.
Go do it. We talk about cheese sticks, and I don't know how we got there.
Okay.
Cheese sticks.
So I hope that's appealing to you guys. Yeah. Get in there.
I mean, dicks made out of cheese. Why not? All right, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. That's all we have for today. All that being said, we encourage you.
Rage on.